never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the Scannon podcast. Yes, we're back.
Good lord, has it been this long?
Yes. Well,
I think it's only been, what, 3 weeks?
It's only been 3 weeks since we had the end of year one,
which was
the second one
year.
After the first of year one. No, last year we did get first of year one, so this is...
We did do a midsummer checkup that never materialized, like though.
Yes, that's because I lost the audio. Yeah,
This is like we're the Malibu Stacy of podcast with new hat. It's essentially the same thing, but, you know, with a new hat.
Yeah, so I'm the Waylon Smithers of this thing. I'm Niall Murphy, I run Scannon, so this I've assembled a crack team this evening. So would you like to introduce yourselves, starting with Grace?
Yes, I'm Grace, and if we're going with the Simpsons analogy, then easily I can be Lisa Simpson. as in all things.
Okay, I am Jay, and I'm going to go with Lionel Hutz.
I'm Darren, and I'm Disco Stu, probably.
Not coming.
You don't advertise, though, so...
One of the things that I did with Scannon was that every writer has a Simpsons
avatar.
Yeah,
who did I get? I've forgotten. Who did I get?
I can't remember who your one is.
I didn't get a Simpsons avatar. I got somebody else. I got a...
Mine is Frank Grimes.
Grimey.
Grimey, yeah.
I can't remember who I got. God damn it.
Somebody grumpy.
Somebody got Jay Sherman, was it me? Or was that Philip? Philip got Jay Sherman.
Jay Sherman doesn't count,
he appeared
though.
On the Simpsons.
I know he appears. Fine. Then I'm Alec Baldwin.
You don't want to be Alec
Baldwin.
You don't want to be. Let's leave Alec Baldwin out.
Especially this week.
No, not this week. Yeah. All right.
So we'll.
Fine. I'm the cast of Cheers. Then I'm Ted Danson.
Right.
Okay. Ted Danson is great.
Ted Danson is great in everything. Yeah. He was actually quite good in CSI as well. Even
his wigs are amazing. But anyway,
Ted Danson Jay is coming for you.
I like Ted Danson, but he. When you see him bald and you see wigs, it's weird. You don't know which one he's going to wear next. It caused a lot of anxiety in my life.
Okay. Right, so the standard...
Very, very raw here.
Yeah.
The standard Scannon podcast begins with what we've been watching recently. So we'll begin with Grace. What have you watched in the last week?
Does this have to be cinema releases?
No.
Anything.
Film-related, TV-related, what you've actually watched in the last week. So I've watched a lot of Blaze and the Monster Machines because I have a two-year-old.
But don't worry, we're going to get to that in a moment.
I have some very strong thoughts about this.
Good lord.
Right. Okay, well, last Friday we went to see The Commuter, which was surprisingly entertaining. I was fully prepared for it to be a bit ridiculous and awful and... You know, in the vein of Taken.
A bit ridiculous. It was very ridiculous.
Yes, but it was ridiculous, I feel, in a very enjoyable way. It was, you know, it knew what it was and it didn't try to overstep things at all, even if the twist was really obvious from very early on.
Well, I think the whole thing was very obvious from very early on. But yeah,
I thought you quite liked it.
No, that's not
you sound very negative for somebody that liked it.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting my into my J mindset here. I feel like we should swap personalities. Yeah.
I have to say, though, like, the premise was actually very good when you think about it. The whole idea of... I can say the premise on this. The whole idea of just picking someone out of the blue who's on the train every day and then say someone here doesn't belong. Like, I like the idea of having contained settings like that where it's by definition very high octane and charged.
Under Siege 2.
It's also very Hitchcock on speed, actually, which I think sort of captures it quite well. Hitchcock on speed on a train. But no, I really, really enjoyed it. I particularly like that it doubled down on its Neeson-ness. Like, it's probably the best movie about the financial crisis since The Big Short and the best Neeson season
you said
movie
that.
Since The Grey.
That worries me when you say things like that.
Why?
Because you make me want to see it.
I know.
That's why I don't like it.
Several people come up to me and say, you make me want to see The Commuter. And I don't know whether I should be proud or disappointed.
I would say disappointed.
I don't think even you would actively dislike it, Jay, because I don't think... No,
you.
I mean this in a good way. Because you know how sometimes you see films that are bad and they're like... deliberately awful.
Yeah.
They never made any attempt really to be good. They're just cynically thrown together and contemptuous of everyone involved, including the audience. But this one actually just feels like a solid mid-range sort of thriller thing that you would...
Which I'm okay with, generally
speaking. It commits wholeheartedly to what it's doing, which is what's so exciting about it.
I'm quite earnest.
And like, there's to give you an example, without spoiling anything, right? Obviously, this is
spoiling The Commuter.
The Commuter.
We all literally watch
every DC.
You will be
decade.
Taken for a ride of non-stop entertainment.
And don't worry, you will have some hair that is the grey at the end of it. But yeah, it commits so wholeheartedly to its premise that... By the point you get to the bit in the movie where the lead character played by Neeson has to explain what is going on using simple English to other characters, he seems positively delirious despite the fact the audience has literally seen these things happening. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that when the character articulates the plot of the movie out loud, it seems insane. That's how wonderfully over the top the movie is.
Yeah. Well, I've seen most of the Neeson
and this is a lot better
bits.
Than most of them.
They vary in
they don't really vary.
There are better ones than there's some bad ones.
Yeah. There are some really
can
bad
we just
ones.
Say that?
Yeah, no, I'm not complaining about that. Like Nonstop from the same director is terrible. Run All Night from the same director.
Run All Night was okay.
Really? I have a Run All Night backpack and it is a lovely backpack.
That's not really anything, that's close to praise. Insight comes in many forms.
But I mean, it reminds me of The Shallows.
I also have a Baywatch bag and a Baywatch beach ball and a Baywatch
somebody
towel,
stop Niall.
The most positive thing that anybody in this podcast is ever going to say about Baywatch.
That's true.
And I like The Shallows as well, actually.
I thought Shallows was pretty.
But it's another one of those great commits to its premise movies. To the point where you have a shark on fire jumping through a wave. And you're like, this is all that I want from this premise.
That's the thing that happens.
I don't need to see it in the cinema, though, do I?
No.
All right. That's what, good. Because I'm
now.
Not going to.
Okay.
I'm sure it'll pop up on like Netflix or Telly.
That's
it's a midweek movie.
Okay.
A midweek movie is probably the best way of putting it.
Yeah. I mean,
so, if anything, just to get the day after tomorrow off film four, that would be a good start.
Yeah.
This is actually quite sad because I really like film four, in terms of, you know, the amount of financing and stuff it does. But then, like, you see, like, it's schedule of films, and it's literally just the same.
Stop showing About Time, you fucking idiot.
Day After Tomorrow every month.
Yeah, and I like The Day After Tomorrow, perhaps controversially.
But how do you think they finance those great movies? By slowing schlock.
Grim.
Yeah.
Grim.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then outside of the cinema, I've been watching Riverdale, because it's back today. Well, technically yesterday, I guess, but we get it today. I love Riverdale. It's fantastic. You should all watch it if you haven't started watching it.
I did, and now I think I'm done.
You have no idea how much fun is ahead.
I think I do.
Yeah?
I think by the end of the first season, I was like, I hate everyone on the show.
No.
Would you go
I know
so far
I did.
You don't hate Jughead and his dad, though,
would you go
right?
so far as to say they're all your Archie foe?
Yeah.
All right.
God damn it, Dan. Yeah, he's all right, but
and
the rest of it, and it... Some point in the first season, it went from really enjoyable to and soapy to not really enjoyable and soapy.
Oh,
and
the part where they all get very real about how much they hate poor
God,
people.
It just and it just was like, oh no, I mean very real. It's like, and I actually, when I was watching,
so
I don't know what episode
that I
it was,
finally
but
talk
it,
about that.
It was kind of 9th or 10th episode, and I was like,
Trump's
kind of watching,
America.
I was like,
I
want to kill all of these people. Stop whining about stuff. You have it easy.
Yeah.
I love the idea of them going, I'm so glad to finally get that off my chest. I thought I was the only one.
But Riverdale as a town seems to be a place that's founded on how, like, collectively they all came together, united by how much they hated poor people.
I must
seriously.
That's quite common in California, though, because you have the, like,
but then you have, like,
place like that to incorporate it on purpose. They became
to
cities
keep,
to keep the poor
well, that
people
that was
outside.
White flight in the suburbs. Like, the suburbs America. Were designed very much to insulate those two.
America
well.
May well be the worst country in the world at this moment in time. I think I might rather live in North Korea.
Well, at least
honestly,
they have a joint.
Indeed.
I actually think it's a fair observation because, like, America holds itself out repeatedly, constantly, as being the best and greatest place in the world. You're like, why do you think this? What is so brilliant about having stolen an entire continent from a people you committed a genocide against, only to set up a society that's rife with inequality, structural racism, and no healthcare, and apparently giving healthcare to people is, like, worse
well,
than
that's socialism.
What makes you so amazing and all of your capitalism and consumerism and warmongering?
Some of it is amazing.
I think... There's some nice scenery.
Yeah.
You've done great TV
but that
shows.
Has nothing
Thank
to do
you, Jake. No, I go to bat and I will say that, like, fundamentally, ideologically, there is nothing wrong with the American concept of, like, a present or a future that you describe to yourself. The issue with America culturally, I think, is an issue of memory in that they don't explore the issues of the genocide they commit. They don't accept that slavery was a thing on which their culture was built and their profitability in their empire was established. But saying that, I think there is something in the American character that is appealing in, like, the idea of having a place where you can strive forward. Now, it's not at all in force. It's far too unregulated. Trust in government is absolutely crazy. The lack of trust in government in the American character is. But I think fundamentally the idea.
If you see the people that they elect, not trusting them is a good
we
idea.
Elect the Healy Rays now.
We also elect morons. But
that's,
yeah,
lads, it's not a political podcast.
Okay.
So, you know, let's,
okay. Yeah.
Let's steer this ship a little bit.
Okay.
A little
okay.
bit.
Okay.
Just
okay.
a little.
Getting back to Riverdale.
Yeah. Where well, are we as an yeah. emblem yeah. of like American equality.
No,
yeah.
that is there is
no.
none of that. I do.
Okay. But I do think that, you know, it's important not to America bash. I think there are issues.
Oh, I'm happy to do it.
Okay. I'm also very happy to do it.
I'm very comfortable. Like extremely so.
No, I'm more on Darren's side because the advances that they've given us technologically and medically and scientifically are way out, far outweigh the other aspects of it.
You just can't overlook the...
No,
you can't
overlook. And the problem is they do overlook. And I
yeah,
think that's
I,
a
no,
fundamental
that's
problem culturally.
I
but I do
same,
think on the other
I have
hand,
the same problem here, to bring it back to Ireland, with all of the celebrations everyone had for 1916 the other year.
The
like,
failed rebellion.
Yeah.
And also the failed rebellion. The failed rebellion that led to 5 years of like agony and suffering. And
but,
then...
Yeah,
which,
but also the
which
fact
then
that this,
led to a civil war.
Yeah.
Yes.
This whole ideal that they were striving for does not exist. Like, the country that we set up is a bloody mess. Like, I'm glad it's an independent mess, but it's still a mess.
Not to get bogged down in the 1916 reasons. Who wants that? But I think there is something to explore in what was done, a sacrifice and whatever. There is something interesting in that.
Yeah.
Even
oh,
if
no,
there
and
are
the terrible
conservative
beauty, yeah.
freak shows. But, you know, I think it's really interesting
yeah.
in that regard.
I think there's
but
a
geez,
very good Western to be told about the Irish Civil War, myself, to be honest. I think that you construct
in,
a Western
in
myth.
In paperback version.
In paperback novel that somebody, the great unfound Irish writer, could possibly publish.
If only we had such a person there.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
But, right. Well, one thing we are going to see is the Great Irish Western set during the famine. So that one, so that we're going to get that.
This
and
is baffling to me. When I read the synopsis of that, it's like an action movie set during the famine and some like reference to the rebellion or revolution they're trying to hold. I'm like, you mean while everyone is starving to death? Yeah, that sounds realistic.
We will get to that.
Yeah. Anyway, aside from Riverdale, the other thing I'm watching and loving on Netflix at the moment is... Well, it depends. It has two titles. Korean show called either, depending on your source, Hello My Twenties or Age of Youth. It's a dramedy set in a college about five female roommates. And it's amazing because in typical Korean fashion, it's meant to be all light and fluffy, but also manages to go into things like people seeing ghosts, childhood trauma, sexual harassment, assault, kidnapping, PTSD. It's a very light and fluffy show with all of this in the background. And it's great. You should watch it.
Never heard of it. That goes on the list of things I'll
it's so
may
good,
get
though.
At some point.
I know, I really enjoy Korean cinema, so the, you know.
Yeah.
It stands to reason that the writing for telly is also very good. And they have good hour-long episodes too. None of this like
yeah.
They
have amazing support for their indigenous industry as well. The Korean, like Busan, where most of the audiovisual area is based in Korea, is just like this mecca for all of the creatives in Korea to go and do and explore, and they're financed by like the government to do these things, and it's just brilliant. Like,
yeah, it sounds good. Imagine something happening like that here. We can but dream.
If only there were somebody at this table who were like capable of organizing and indexing Irish film for future generations and posterity.
Gee, if only we had such an expert.
I mean, they would have to like publish a magazine.
Don't
on
I
a
already
basis.
Do enough?
I think that's what we're suggesting.
Oh God, I need to do more. Excellent. Thanks very
no,
much.
You should get paid for it.
Yeah,
that's
what
we're
saying. Suggesting.
Right, I will pass the trophy to trophy torch, whichever. To
I'll
try.
Take the trophy. I'll take that trophy. Okay, yeah, I'll go. Yeah, I've seen a few actually since the last time we talked.
a year and a half ago.
Well, pre-Christmas, I'm talking.
Okay,
Jesus. Okay. Spielberg documentary.
Yes.
The HBO one.
It's a bit long.
It's 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
You could say that. And manages a remarkable feat to skip over pretty much everything that didn't work. Which is incredible. Which I actually want to know more about.
Yeah,
I want
yeah.
to know
yeah.
more
I
about
think
this.
That's
I
the angle
it.
For a Spielberg documentary,
yeah.
surely. Because
I want
it's phenomenally
to,
successful.
I want to hear about
it's probably quite difficult to get him to sit down and go, so our subject for today is going to be 1941.
No. Though it's mentioned, and like
quote,
some
yeah.
of them are repeatedly mentioned. I want to hear about The Terminal, I want to hear about Hook, I want to hear about the stuff that misfired. Or
Hook
didn't.
Is incredibly
but,
interesting.
But
oh, yeah,
that's exactly it.
Yeah.
I want to hear that, but it doesn't touch it really. But
so
Spielberg
it didn't
is very,
you then,
no,
is the
it
issue.
Didn't. Spielberg's very engaging, though, I have to say, as an interviewee. Mm-hmm. And like, his stories are interesting.
To say, he's a great storyteller. Possibly the greatest American.
Amazing
story.
He's
going to
hit you.
I'm not
going to.
I'm not getting into this with you.
Okay. Not now.
Not now. Later. But no, it's okay. It's well worth watching. And if you're a Spielberg fan, as some people here are, Niall and Grace and Darren.
so we have a non-fan.
I'm somewhat of a fan. I do like it. I think he's, you know, not quite... I don't revere him certainly as much as most people do, but he certainly had his fair share.
You're not under his spiel now?
No, I'm not. But he's done very good films and a couple of absolute masterpieces. And I am weirdly looking forward to the post, even though it looks the most Spielbergian film there's ever been.
What year is the post session?
1972-73. Yeah. It's around the publishing of the Pentagon Papers. We'll talk about it later when we get
Why
to...
Why does he say they've been lying about the Vietnam War for 30 years in 1973?
No.
Is this just a quote taken out of context?
It's also the fact that Vietnam was rooted in post-colonialism, so they're talking about the French War as well, which is supported by the American government.
Oh, yeah, so that
this is a very political podcast.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry.
So I got
How do we feel about states' rights versus
Indochina.
Guns, let's talk about guns.
Immediately after the war, 1946, Indochina and the French occupation there was a big, big problem. So they would have been. So it's it's Western powers in Asia rather than America.
Okay, the other one I watched, which was not very good but interesting in for many reasons, is XX, which is the
horror
anthology, which is kind of pitched as because it's three female directors making the shorts with a kind of weird wraparound kind of stop motion thing of. Kind of Jan Svankmajer, kind of weird, kind of Czech, kind of animation.
Okay.
Doesn't have any real reason to be there except to look good.
That's a reason.
A bit
itself,
like in Monty Python's Flying Circus, it's just there, just for
lit up space.
But I think it's about an hour and 20, so it doesn't really extend. I would say it's welcome. There's three stories, roughly around 20 minutes each. The same issues that you always get with anthology films in that regard is that there's not quite enough time for character development, particularly in horror. It's always tricky, I think, because you know if something happens, then it's like, you don't really care. A lot of feature horrors don't give a fuck about
the cast. Yeah.
So why should
spend 90 minutes with these people?
Yeah, exactly. But the first one was pretty good, but the last one was called. I'm trying to remember who directed The Invitation.
I should know this. I love The Invitation.
The Invitation's very good, and she directs the last one in this, which is the best one of the three, and it's the only one that has real characterization in it. So I would suggest watching it, particularly for that. The second one's pretty gruesome. The first one doesn't really work.
You're thinking of Karen Kasuda?
She did the last one in this called Her Only Living Son, which is really interesting. Doesn't 100% work, but as a kind of get in, get out 20 minutes, and actually has a little bit of a hook that you actually kind of want to know what happens and stuff. So it kind of works in that regard.
Yeah, well, I mean...
The other two, uneven, but... it's not like an hour and 20 minutes of your time. It's on Netflix. It's,
That's what I like about those anthology ones where there's
massive
usually,
at least
usually
one worth your attention.
It's exactly that.
Even if it's a bad one, it's over in 10 minutes.
And then finally, I would say I watched Good Time, which Darren, I think, has seen also.
Yes.
Which is the same Safdie brothers, isn't it?
Yeah, one of them starring, and they did everything.
Danny,
they did the music,
they did the
editing.
They're pure indie film.
It's
makers,
like watching the credits roll in The Room, produced by
Exactly.
There's
that.
But is it in that level? Would you argue it's at that level, Jay?
Of The Room? But I've never seen The Room, so I couldn't possibly.
I'd actually
comment.
Love to hear what you think of The Room.
But I've seen
The Disaster.
I feel I've seen enough of The Room as I ever really want to see, I have to say. But Good Time,
Speaking
I thought was
frankly.
Brilliant. I loved it. And I think I liked it a lot more than you did.
I thought it was expression love. Yeah, I know. What have you done with Jay? Where is he?
I actually worried I might got carried away, so I'll have to rewatch it some way to see if I got
a
bit enthusiastic.
Oh, yeah,
in the moment.
It's perfectly adequate. It's very well directed. It's very fun.
It's great.
But it doesn't add up to me. It's a series. It's almost like an anthology. It's a sequence of set pieces tied together
that work reasonably well. It actually
just
abandons the idea of plot, and it just has a couple of little things going on.
Yeah.
The whole film's hooked on.
But it should have in theory a strong emotional arc, but it isn't even interested in that. It's just a series of stuff that happens.
It's frenetic, it's thrilling,
it looks pretty.
The colours are fantastic. The score's great.
Yeah, it's got that sort of 80s John Carpenter-esque synthesizer head.
And it never stops. And Patterson is great.
Patterson's okay, yeah.
Patterson's pretty
good.
It's
not a role that demands a lot of anybody. Okay, fine.
But I really liked it.
I thought it was okay.
I know you did.
Thank you.
But you're wrong. But that's fine.
Thank you, Jay.
But no, I really like that.
Take
and
your
again,
wrong and sit there and be wrong and get used to it.
Would you? And it's on Netflix again as well. So
which
you know,
good time.
Good time.
Good time.
It's
okay.
on Netflix,
and it is
well
only like 90 minutes as well. So it's not actually
yeah, yeah
that
exactly.
Much
yeah,
the
yeah.
joy that I get whenever I look up a film and I'm like, it's only 90 minutes.
I've said this before,
amazing.
Though. There should be a 90 minutes and under category on
yep.
Netflix. I've
yep.
said this I don't know many times. Like I
yep.
would. Just search that at like 10:30 at night so I can go to bed at midnight.
I'd argue
perfect.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
need a better advanced search which would include items like that. Basically.
Mm-hmm.
They just
I would
need
say.
Better categorization
yeah.
in general.
But
yeah.
instead they're moving away from that, like even just to like thumbs up and thumbs down rating and percentage
I never rate films on Netflix anyway, so
no,
I
know,
I don't really care about that.
Like they're making it less specific because it's
yeah.
designed to be like you just push a button and it plays, which is grand. But it does mean that there's so much stuff on there. I didn't realize Underground was on there until the middle of last week.
Underground's pretty great, isn't it?
Underground's really great.
I know.
So I didn't realize that was on Netflix until I actually went looking
yeah.
for it because it wouldn't come up in my recommendations and like I
half
couldn't
the
still
time,
get
I find things by accident. If you clicked on a film that you're like, oh, this looks interesting, and then it says like related,
yeah.
and you're like, how long has that been on here?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly
yeah.
that.
Amazon Prime is similar, which I've only got very recently. And you know the first thing you do when you go to it, you know they have a kind of these are recommended and they obviously
yeah.
push
yeah,
all
like
the XX
yeah.
stuff they
yeah.
push right and I've gone to it on how many of those lists and I was like right I've saved the X amount on my watch list I'll get to them when I get to them but then later on then I decided like I'll go deep into the kind of genres and see what I find and he's like stumbled on Room Moonlight so like,
buried
like, where
down
are
the bottom
they?
Yeah.
It's like for the love of Christ now
yeah.
I really look forward to watching really much of Moonlight man it's kind of 1080p and all 9 minutes so it's like, God damn it, lads. Put that
I
up
know.
Front and centre. Like, it's a fucking
yeah.
Best Picture winner.
And it won, yeah, it did win Best Picture. Like, so.
Lord.
I think that that could be a selling tactic for them, too, when, you know, as they try to acquire
yeah.
more content off the bat. Be like,
that's
we
true.
Have found a way that people will actually find it. Because I'm thinking, like, obviously people like us who are more into this will be aware of some big,
yeah.
important...
Yeah. I only found out about Good Time being on Netflix through Jay.
Yeah, like, I mean, you find it out in certain ways, but you have, like, your whole kind of uninvested audience, for want of a better way of putting it, who you could like get as an audience for your film, but who aren't going to actively seek it out.
Yeah.
You know, you just
yeah.
find a way to bring it to them
that's
and
true.
Tell them why they should be watching it. And I don't understand why they're not more interested in doing that.
Because they don't care.
Well, I think because people watch enough as it is.
Yeah.
Like,
it
like,
doesn't really
no,
matter
no,
to them what they watch.
Very
yeah,
few people turn on Netflix
like
and turn it off again.
Enhancing your product from a basic capitalistic perspective, you know?
I think
it
seem does
bigger,
enough.
Better, faster.
Well,
I think
Amazon certainly should do it because it, as in... Because they don't have nearly as much content as they need to.
No.
And if you're going to,
but
like, if
Amazon
you probably,
seem to have a lot of TV
Amazon
shows
has a lot of bad, kind of paranoid post 9/11 documentaries.
Oh.
And
oh,
I
really?
Went deep on the series, but they're dreadful.
Also,
I mean, Loose Change and stuff
watch,
like that. Like,
I like that you watch them.
I didn't watch them.
But
I,
just
I went through
them.
It. I'm fascinated by it.
They're saying that they're dreadful. I mean,
oh, I know.
Okay.
There's
this
subgenre of 9/11, post 9/11 documentaries
yeah,
made that
that's
Google Earth and
Bannon. Bannon.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly that. It's exactly that.
Hey. I will not hear his rap version of, was it Coronana set in the Rodney King riots disparaged
oh,
here.
What?
Have
I
you read the script? It. The script is amazing.
I think
there are things I'd like to read.
No,
I'm written by an ethno-nationalist.
On the Amazon Prime thing, one of the big problems that Amazon Prime has is that it cares not one jot about Ireland. It does not.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, yeah.
Care.
Nobody cares about us.
But Netflix, at least they have.
Yeah, they do,
they've
yeah.
done something. Whereas Netflix, generally speaking, what's available in the UK is also available in Ireland.
Yeah.
Amazon, what's available in the UK and what's
oh,
available
yeah.
in Ireland is massively different, which is quite odd because Ireland and the UK are considered one region
the market,
when it
yeah.
comes to distribution.
So there's
films.
More stuff in the UK on Amazon.
A lot
yes.
more.
Can I
but
ask a question?
The
Sorry.
Handmaiden.
Actually,
example.
No. I'll hold that question till after the podcast.
Because
I'm getting into dicey.
The Handmaiden, for example. I wanted to watch The Handmaiden. I had Amazon Prime. I had to actually go through a proxy to watch it, which made it absolutely useless.
Yeah.
Because it's so slow, which is like, and it's the same distributor in the UK and Ireland.
Yeah,
so
and that's because we're one market. In
yeah,
terms
no,
of
I,
that,
yeah.
digital distribution,
that
distribution
makes no sense.
Of film,
yeah.
we are one market. So there's,
yeah,
it is quite odd in that
that's
respect.
But hey, at the other point, at least Amazon do theatrical releases, which I do quite like about
for
their,
now,
their
do,
release
do,
platform.
Do you
think?
I seen an article earlier, a couple of hours ago, actually, that they're looking at winding down their indie.
Interesting.
thing, because obviously they've taken a thing on, they've taken that approach in TV terms,
yeah,
because they've cut a lot, they've cancelled a lot of shows.
Oh yeah, they cancelled like One Mississippi, for example.
So we know exactly what they're trying to do now in TV terms. I suspect they may be going that way film terms.
Well,
okay, well, literally,
a lot,
yeah, was it Bezos said he wanted
his
own
Game of Thrones.
Yeah. And buying Lord of the
rather than Lord of the Rings.
Buying Lord of the Rings is the most
brand recognition.
Yes,
so sick of the Lord of the Rings.
Buying Lord of the Rings is like the most unimaginative way of doing that. It's
Can I be like the contrasting voice here and just say that, like, Lord of the Rings offers you massive mythology to adapt.
But
it's
so
not
fucking dull.
Jay, I know
I'm in a minority.
Don't lump me with Jay on this. I think it's a very cynical move.
But my point is, it's not like they bought three, for example, standalone books that they can fill in those and that's that, and they have to make the rest of it up like they do sometimes with other things. With Lord of the Rings, there's a gazillion different stories you could adapt. And we won't all talk about the elephant in the room, like Peter Jackson destroying the enhanced or the extended mythology with The Hobbit, which was kind of...
No, because between The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, in the history of Middle-earth, there's like 12 books.
Yep.
So
12?
There's three of them between
And they're
the
finished
and
as well,
oh,
which gives them an
exactly.
advantage. Yeah.
There's not enough money in the world that can be to read.
Tolkien was prolific
yeah.
in his
yeah.
writing.
Jay, I'm pitching a podcast I'd like you to be a part
he's
of.
He's such a bad writer, though. Like, I'm sorry, he's a dreadful writer.
He's not great with prose, but in terms of...
Which is, you know, as a writer...
Okay, if you're a fan...
Storyteller, then,
like,
maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're a fan of things that are very verbose... Then it works.
I just
don't
and
need
I,
five pages on the history of a stool
of,
leg.
I'm a fan of
some of us
that
like that kind of crap. Maybe I like
this
the misery.
Since Greg's getting all defensive and Mrs. Doyle about it.
I learned a lot of vocabulary from Tolkien.
Yeah, especially how to describe a leaf on a tree. I think
exactly.
you
yeah. tree. Don't forget, like, all those pages where, like, people would start singing, which I usually hate in everything because I hate...
Yeah.
Don't Bobadil!
But yeah, but I'm oddly
I
open to
you.
It.
Lads, these are all shrooming.
As a child,
that's
I used to imagine him played by Tom Cruise because I figured he'd be short. Anyway, sorry, that was a bit of a tangent.
Darren, what did you watch?
So obviously I watched Good Times. I rewatched The Terminator, the classic James Cameron film, which is great.
Hooray.
The only great James Cameron film.
Yeah, shut up, Jay. One of the things about the Terminator, which I really like, is the fact that it captures this sense of, like, apocalyptic dread. America's afraid of its cities in the 1980s. So, like, Ghostbusters and all this other stuff as well. I'd argue it's one of the great ones because there's no difference between Los Angeles in 1984 and Los Angeles when it's patrolled by killer robots. Except there's probably a lower crime rate in the killer robot version as well.
The buildings aren't as kind of structurally sound.
That's what regulation gets
well,
you, Jay.
Indeed,
I mean,
would there be less smog if there's no people around?
If there are no people around, is
more
smog
smoke,
a concern?
Though.
Yeah, burning bodies.
But,
yeah,
but also it's a mechanized. You know, it's a mechanical world, so there's more
carbon
smog,
dioxide
surely, because of the fact that.
But the fact that there are no people means that that's irrelevant.
Yeah,
so
that's
it
true,
defeats.
But,
so I mean, you know,
yeah.
come on.
What's
that's
that
great
show? What's that show on Discovery that this occasion turns into? You know, the one, not how it's made. The other one that people test stuff to see if it's true.
Oh, Mythbusters.
That's a kind of thing. Well, hang on.
I'm
if we go
to
2027 in LA, what's the problem with it?
I like the idea that Jay thinks we're going to Mythbust Terminator by designing Skynet.
Yeah.
And standing there in the
record. Oh, you think that can't happen, Darren?
Jay,
I bet somebody is trying.
You guys are right. The smog level is surprisingly low here.
What a small price to pay at the end of humanity.
What do you reckon the odds are that like the AI/robot thing will be the thing that actually ends us?
Well, this is what the thing about Elon Musk that I don't get, right? Which is, at this stage, I would welcome a benevolent robotic dictator because at least it would be competent.
Depends
like,
who programmed him.
Yeah, that's it.
Is that Elon Musk or something he builds?
Good point. But I do also like... At this stage, and it's the same thing with, like, celebrity presidents. Like, 2016 and 2017 have so horribly messed up my expectations that I'm like, I will settle for competent celebrity president. I will settle
I want
for...
no celebrity president.
I know, but Jay, you're not going
to
get that.
I don't want anybody being married to or a daughter or son of any other president. I want somebody with substance.
And
to
I want a
decent
toilet made out of gold, Jay, but it ain't happening.
Well, you can aim for it, Darren. We have higher standards.
Okay, but
I really hope that if he does have a toilet made of gold, that he would aim first, because otherwise you're peeing on the floor.
Well, no, you
which
we
is what American.
I'm presuming you have a backup toilet. I'm working on.
You're not
going to
use the gold.
That's
the fancy.
You have to
have
a game.
Dig a hole in the ground if you have.
Okay, you're all crazy.
Anyway, my point is, though, I sort of find myself wondering, would a robotic dictatorship be that bad at this stage?
Good God.
I know. Welcome to 2018, where it's, the world is finally broken down.
They couldn't possibly do a worse job than we've done.
It's true. It's actually true.
I also watched Before I Wake, which is the horror film from the director of Oculus.
I saw that.
Which is... You saw Before I Wake.
Steve Aram, is that one?
Yeah, I think it is. It's someone with Thomas Jane and Jake... Okay.
Hang on. I mixed them up.
Jacob Tremblay, or whatever the guy.
No,
we
did
Room,
not.
Or?
I mixed it up for something else.
Jacob
sorry.
Tremblay.
Jacob Tremblay. It's like Oculus. It's a very clever concept executed in a way that is below average. It's a movie that has a smart premise, and I'm not going to tell you what that premise is.
I agree with you. Oculus.
Yeah, Oculus. Like, so we'll talk about Oculus. Oculus is a movie where they discover a supernatural object, and so they set out to document that it's supernatural and to destroy it, which is a clever concept for a horror film. It's to objectively, scientifically prove that something horrible is happening and therefore like be validated, which is a clever way of approaching concept. But the execution is so stupid, because if the characters are smart enough to understand that basic convention of horror films, somehow it becomes inexcusable when they make the same mistakes.
You can't have it both ways.
Yeah, you can't have them act like regular horror characters
That's the premise of Scream.
Yeah, no, but it's not. Yeah, but the premise of Scream is that they're smart enough.
That's
to,
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Dark Song is the film I was mixing up.
Oh, okay, apologies.
Oh, that's really good.
Decent.
I saw it at 11 o'clock at night after I'd watched a load of other movies, and it frightened the crap out of me.
Well, it didn't frighten me at all, but I was fascinated by it. It was really interesting. But anyway, sorry there.
So Before I Wake has that problem. It's on Netflix, not really worth seeking out as well.
Okay.
And then finally, I watched the entire last season of Black Mirror, and we're going to count those as movies because Letterboxd does. And I quite liked USS Callister, which is the Star Trek parody, the exploration of toxic Star Trek fandom, which as a Star Trek fan who is engaged with certain aspects of Star Trek fandom,
I found very clever.
I made it so, if you
indeed,
will.
Indeed.
But yeah, it's very clever. It's Jesse Plemons and Kristen Milioti.
Yeah.
It's fantastically well observed. It's very wry, and it's more optimistic. And I think the thing about Black Mirror is that in moving from the UK to the US in terms of production, moving from Channel 4 to Netflix, it's become a much more optimistic show, in that its show episodes tend to have happier endings and tend to deal with like American aspects. So like Black Museum, the final episode of the season, is very much about like slavery and racial oppression, whereas Callister is about like Star Trek, which is a US institution, and the way in which toxic geekdom has sort of spilled out in the mainstream, and you see the alt-right or whatever, etc., etc. But one of the things I like about USS Callister is that it is, while it is an exploration, deconstruction of cynical, toxic male masculinity, or male masculinity, there's redundancy, but it is also a loving reinforcement of everything that you love about Star Trek. It's about a group of people who come together to work for the betterment of themselves and others, while rejecting nerds who really, really don't care about anything but their fancy models. I quite like that.
Which is surprising in Star Trek, because you know we're talking about a series that had the nerd in it with Wesley Crusher, who was essentially like the fanboy living on board the Enterprise.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I think our attitude towards certain aspects of nerddom have changed when we've seen how that culture sort of behaves.
We used to think they were benign.
Short Circuit.
I only watched very recently, we talked about this before, Buffy. And
the nerds in season 6, which are the most underrated villains in the show,
and toxic as fuck as
they are, and they're very well observed.
That was quite relatively early
into
how
the three of them have is quite something.
Yeah. That's why it hit me, and that's years after
they were
first broadcast.
It's aged very well, very cleverly written,
and very prescient.
Yeah, and at the time it seemed kind of odd, because you were like, well, it seems like they're picking on a group that will never have any political power, except here we are.
Well, they don't have any political power, so it's just
they have Hollywood power.
Yeah, and the alt-right, and you know,
no, nerds have,
and tech companies.
Yeah, right, yeah.
A lot of very, very influential tech companies. There's a distinct Venn diagram there.
Yeah, and also like swatting. We had a guy killed with swatting.
What's swatting?
Swatting. Oh, this is the thing where in online gaming.
I feel old when I hear these things.
Gather around, children, I'll tell you a tale.
This is quite something.
This is something, right? So basically, imagine you were in a video game, and imagine that you are chatting with somebody on a headset, and you say something that sets them off or triggers them of the time. Now, what this person would normally do if they were a functioning human being would be get over it and cope with it or whatever. What swatting involves is calling local law enforcement in the place where you, the person who has insulted them, lives, staging normally a hostage crisis, but could be any form of like action that requires extreme police intervention, and basically getting a SWAT team to target that person's house, which has resulted in death. It's in America.
Can you imagine the guards calling their house?
Everyone listen to that, and then let's go back to what we were saying earlier about America.
Yeah, but I would agree.
It is functioning democracy, everyone.
But it is an illustration of the very literal real world power that these people exert.
This is what I mean. Like, I welcome the robot apocalypse.
World power, though. That is just
this guy got shot.
Oh, well, right.
And killed.
People get shot all the time by nobody's all around the street. That's not necessarily
through the application of state power.
Would that be happening forever?
Well,
overreaching militarized
police force. Yeah, we're not talking about cops shooting people in America, because quite common. But no, this is a thing where you use the armed
apparatus of state
to enforce your will.
In America, where the apparatus of state is not to be trusted.
Oh yeah, no, so I know.
My point is the problem is necessarily.
That sort of attitude is harmless. Those people are harmless, and they are not.
They're not, but they were never harmless, would be my argument to some degree.
We just weren't aware of
And they weren't given any currency or anything.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. Now they have currency, and
now they have the internet. They can find each other, they can mobilize.
Yeah, which is why I think the Buffy thing aged very well. But that's me anyway.
I agree.
Niall.
Me, yeah, because I have kids, I have been watching quite a lot of children's TV. So, I mean, my little fella's on a Pixar kick at the moment, so which is great for me.
That's a pretty good kick.
Because I love Pixar. So he's
it could be worse. It could be DreamWorks animation.
He does quite like Shrek. So, but not...
just the first one.
No, all four. Recently, he's been... He loves Toy Story. Toy Story is his staple. It's one of his go-to things. So he has a lot of the Toy Story toys and all the rest. It was one of his Christmas presents. But he in the last week I've been trying to broaden out the movies, the Pixar movies that he's watched. So we watched a lot of the Pixar shorts. He really enjoyed it started with the ones that were related to Toy Story, and we branched out from there. So he watched Bounding, which is the great one about the jackalope and the sheep who gets.
I haven't seen many of them. I've only seen a handful of them.
But you've not seen them when you saw the films?
No, not really.
Okay.
But
I mean, we all
love
Lava.
Was the one before Inside Out, and it's about the
worst
volcano who falls in love with another volcano. But it's
that
about,
one I have seen.
It's about the December May romance.
December, early January.
I think that's the one that one of my friends showed it to me, and she was on about how she'd watched it with her boyfriend. She was like, the two of us were on the verge of ending it all after watching that. So I was like, oh, what a should have put that on the poster.
And you lava me.
I'm not sure I've seen any of the Pixar movies in the cinema, though. So
I haven't seen many of them in the cinema.
They're not things I tend to go
to. That's why I've missed the shorts.
That's what my young relatives are great.
Yeah.
We're going to see a Pixar film, whether you like it or not.
I actually really enjoy the fact that there's no one under the age of 27 in my family.
Night and Day is amazing.
Night and Day is one of the best ones.
Not in this country, anyway.
Brilliant. But the one he really enjoyed was the one with the snowman.
Of course. The very early one.
Yeah,
the
very early one with the snowman in the snow globe.
You show them with the baby.
No.
Okay.
We haven't watched...
You don't want to give him nightmares.
We've only watched a couple of them, so...
Brave the Fireflies?
No. We work up to Ghibli. We're not there yet. But at the moment, we watched Brave, which is actually quite good, and it's very good.
I love Brave.
As a mother-daughter story.
To the surprise of no one, I'm sure, I love Brave.
Yeah, no. Brave actually turns out to be quite good.
It will be a great Disney film. It's an okay Pixar film.
Holds up to rewatches. We watched A Bug's Life, which has a lot of fun in it, but is...
I cannot recall that.
It's one of the underrated...
It's no
ants. It's one of the underrated...
Yeah, I remember ants.
I'm not sure I've seen it.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Kevin Spacey, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah, I think so, but
Woody Allen and
Monsters University and Monsters, Inc.
Monster University is terrible.
Monster University is not great.
Monsters Inc. is great.
Monsters Inc. is brilliant.
It's great fun. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Monsters Inc. is
yeah. Like
The Incredibles.
The Incredibles. Yeah.
The Incredibles is
which he calls the heroes movie, but yeah, The Incredibles is it's my favorite. So I was
favorite
very
Pixar.
Happy. But he watched
it's the best Fantastic Four film and the best Watchmen movie.
Best.
Which is no mean accomplishment.
It's not my favorite animation. My favorite Pixar. But so we watched that. We watched Little Mermaid as well. So a lot of that stuff. But then I watched Battle of the Sexes.
Actually, I've seen this as well.
Which I enjoyed.
I liked.
It's all right. Yeah.
The cast is fantastic.
It's very timely because of the fact that, it's women struggling to get paid the same amount
cast
as men, which is still a fecking problem.
Stone and Crowder, great.
Yeah. Well, even Riseborough's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Love Andrea Riseborough.
Yeah, she's great.
She's always great when she turns up and things. Yeah. No, but
It's very amiable. It's about something as well. It has something.
It's not the best film ever made.
But structurally, it's a little off here and there, but I think generally
it's from
the
guys who did Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah, yeah.
So of course it's going to ramble, but it's fantastic.
It stands up quite well now, and it was very enjoyable. And I also watched The Darkest Hour as well. And The Darkest Hour is dull.
Perfectly cromulent. It's a delivery mechanism for Gary Oldman's Oscar.
Gary Oldman is fantastic, but the rest of it is like, yeah. And what is
going on with the line in the trailer where he keeps shouting about a tiger's jaw or mouth or something.
You cannot negotiate with a tiger!
Don't even. I'm so sick of seeing
I don't know why he sounds so like the Cookie Monster when I do an impression of him. But
I'm not into cinematic depictions of Churchill.
But I mean, this
was a man who had an invasion plan for Ireland. So
yeah.
I do, exactly.
There's a great statue of him in Toronto, this poor, broke, struggling
country into the war, so we could be even more obliterated.
Right beside Toronto Town Hall or City Hall, there is a big statue of Winston Churchill.
The Yanks are really into him, I think.
Yeah, well, when you're over for the Toronto,
isn't there? Hasn't it been made like? Hasn't like Brian Cox and various?
Oh yeah, but they've been done for television. Have you seen the poster for it? The poster's fantastic. It looks like a rom-com because it's Winston Churchill holding a cigar in one hand, and on one side there's Kristen Scott Thomas, and on the other side there's Lily James, and you practically expect the tagline.
I feel sorry for the two of them.
Practically expect the tagline to be Winston Churchill has a problem. Because it's blue skies and like Westminster behind him.
Is that set at Dunkirk as well, or around that time?
It is set around Dunkirk. It is probably the third best Dunkirk.
I'm gonna wait to see if I can make that joke.
Go for it, Jay. You're wrong, but do it.
Number one, their finest. Number two, what's the name of the film?
Nancy Starling.
And number three, Dunkirk, and then hopefully number four, The Darkest Hour.
But the thing about it is. Their finest did a great job with Churchill by not showing him at all.
Yeah, I was fine with that.
Same with Dunkirk.
Also I was fine with that.
Yeah. But yeah. Also, you're wrong, but anyway.
Yeah, so they were wrong.
He's not wrong. I think the Nancy Starling would have been great.
Me too.
It also, first of all, it wasn't released in any 2017, even a fictional one. Second of all, it was released in a fictional 1941.
Yes. See, our problem
is... Your core premise is unfounded.
I don't see what your issue is here now. Clearly, you're way on the limb here.
Was anyone else,
no grounding
was
in
Was anyone else enjoying that? I can't remember who tweeted it, but somebody wrote, I think, in the course of the Golden Globes, like, you can see Christopher Nolan just gradually realising it's not his year or something. He went and, like, killed himself making Dunkirk, and everyone's like, bleh.
It will never be his year, though. I think there's something kind of clever in that.
Sad.
Sort of.
That's not true. It's
poor
not that
Christopher.
It'll never be his year.
He'll just take all of his money.
Not,
he's not. Hitchcock.
He's not Hitchcock.
Maybe he needs
basically
to,
Hitchcock.
Or maybe
Kubrick.
He needs to do a
Kubrick
one. And
Kubrick
ride a horse
wants,
off of
picture, didn't he, at least?
That worked so well.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the ride.
Exactly.
I know, but.
For no reason other than to do it.
But sure, Spielberg thought for a long time that he was going to
and
do
obviously
that.
Scorsese.
Then, yeah, so
it does happen.
Yeah. So yeah, when Nolan produces...
When will white men finally get the break they deserve?
Yeah, that's what
we
want.
So Interstellar,
we're going to break through that glass ceiling. Us white men, we're going to break through that glass ceiling. Finally get the recognition we deserve.
We'll
recognize this white male English director.
When will I find somebody stop stepping on me so I can fulfill...
Controversial awards mean absolutely nothing. But anyway.
They do, though, in fairness. Mean nothing. I mean.
Yeah, no. The Golden Globes is
they don't
voted
give
on,
awards to good people.
It's voted. Yeah, that's
people.
It.
I like Oscars, though. I do. I agree with all that, and yet the Oscars are old Oscars.
But the Oscars,
it's a conversation starter. It's also
the grams. It's like a big fancy soap opera you get once.
Yeah,
it
is.
There's also
and
so
many. Also
on
my, if somebody's nominated, I really like. I get really invested. Like,
I
hope
just
they
love.
They almost
yeah,
never
I just
win.
Love watching how mutually congratulatory they are. They're like cinema. Standing ovation.
I remember Philip Seymour Hoffman of the Oscar, I was nearly crying. I was so happy because the people I go want to win never win. And I was like, oh, Philip Seymour Hoffman, then he died.
Whatever about Tolkien as a storyteller, Jay, I feel like you kind of.
I cut out a lot of needless exposition. That's okay.
I will feel that way when Jessica Chastain.
Moving
gets
swiftly on. Oh. Right.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yes.
On to part two.
The sequel.
Yeah. 45 minutes in, we're on to
dramatic
part two.
Yes.
Yeah. The news.
There's news. Oh, pray tell, what
the
is the news?
The news of, in Irish film terms is we have IFTA nominations. Oh, yeah.
Finally.
Yes.
Second only to the Oscars.
Yeah, so speaking of Oscars, it's the Irish Oscars.
We don't have all the necessary IFTAs, though, I think is the issue.
Yeah, so the big news in the IFTAs was that there was only three nominees for the... for best actress.
But that's only because there's only three women actors in Ireland, like, in fairness.
Yeah.
If you could just become a couple of more actors.
Yeah.
If somebody could train in the next year, that'd be grand.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean, this was deplorable that that's the case. But actually, in some ways, it's actually really good that that was this. No.
Well, gather around.
As an indictment of the poor representation within the industry, as in, these are the only three we could actually nominate.
Yeah.
Well,
this
they
is
weren't
what,
even
yeah.
the only
three, though.
That's the thing. You could have, they could have, if they could have gone out of its way and
Twice
and,
Shy, for example.
Yeah, and included Twice Shy, or included Sanctuary, or included Got Heaven.
You mean there's Irish films that they didn't include for no reason whatsoever?
Well, Sanctuary was nominated the year before, and so it was probably Twice Shy. It's an independent film, so you have to submit, and there's an application process, and
you have to pay for
every category into which you enter. So
how much do you have to pay?
€50, but still.
Per category.
So
it's probably worth it for an actor.
But yeah, for the independent.
In retrospect, you probably should have £250 at it.
Yes. But
I probably would have.
So
do you think it's you get a solid return on investment for that, though?
Well, I think, if you think
if
of
you
best
win.
Actress,
well, you get to call
you
yourself
get a nominee.
Winning. Yeah, that's exactly.
I mean, that's probably worth more than
£50. But how do you know that you're going to get a nominee?
Well, in retrospect. No, I know. In retrospect, with three nominations, you were certain to get a nominee.
Yes.
I could have got a nominee for the £250 in it because there's nobody else. For your consideration.
Think about how awful it would be.
Inanimate carbon rod.
Think how awful it would be if you paid your €50 and there were still only three nominees.
You
paid
the money to take your chances there.
But there being only three nominees has brought the conversation.
Yes.
Around.
No, I did. No,
whereas had they gone out, got two more nominees, it would never have been a thing, which is what happened last year.
But that only matters if something happens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The conversations are one thing.
Yeah.
It's
it remains to be seen, I think, because I did read last year about the Irish Film Board introducing, with I'm sure the best of intentions, a lot of or extra supports anyway for female filmmakers. So we'll see how that plays out.
The Film Board in 2015 went for this, where they were like, we're going to go for gender parity, this is what we're going to do to get gender parity, we're not introducing quotas, we are going to say that what we want to happen is for more female applicants to come forward. That didn't happen.
They're getting one from me.
But that didn't happen.
I shouldn't be saying that.
So that's
go for it.
So there were more female applicants, yes, but there wasn't the level to which it was possible to have 50-50 funding.
My
so they've now introduced female-only funding strands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that there's positive discrimination in terms of women.
Can I ask, because I genuinely don't know this, and I don't know if this information is available yet, but you know how sometimes when you go into these application processes, it's for, shall we say, not necessarily established talent, but people who have credits to their name, or who have, like, say, a production company attached to a script and so on.
Yeah.
Are those kind of requirements in place for these funding?
So there
strands
are two strands for the new positive female-led ones. One is for established talent, one is for new. So one is for ones that have TV credits or credits in short film or features beforehand. The other one is for people who don't.
Okay.
That's
now,
good. I think that's important.
In terms of applying, if you have a production company on board already, you are far more likely to get funded. I mean, significantly more likely to get funded. 90, 100, 200%, much more likely to get funded if you have a production company. But if it's just you on your tod, you are more likely to get laughed out the door.
I just need to make a point.
A big problem the Film Board have is that they don't have enough people to read the applications. They don't have enough people to give feedback on the applications. Mm-hmm. It may not be the case that the script that you produce, the script that you send forward, is read by three people, has been reviewed by three people, and there's three people's readers' notes back on it. That may not happen. It just because the Film Board still is criminally underfunded compared to where it should be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it is worth noting that while they are trying to do their best, and in some ways they can. There's a lot of criticism that can be levelled at the Film Board, and legitimately so. They are still coming from a position where they are way behind compared to their contemporaries.
I just make a note that I read an interview, I think it was last year or the year before, and I think it was with Ava DuVernay, but I can't remember exactly. It could have been her, but it could have been somebody else, where she made a point of people writing screenplays, and she was talking about Hollywood in general, but I think it applies across the board, that if you're writing a film and you've got crowd scenes, there's nothing to stop anyone writing black people or Hispanic people into crowd scenes, that they get work, even if it's just extras, even if it's our small talking parts,
yeah,
or ever correspond. And I think this applies here. There's no stop every bloke that gets, if the funding, or sorry, or film board funding, to write better parts for women in films. Like, it not, it's like it shouldn't only be on women,
yeah,
like, kind of things come along on women to get funding, and which it's great and it should be in everyday, but like, Jesus, change it up. Like, I mean, we're done with the anti-hero. We were talking about this earlier on, like the male anti-hero, as even as writer, but even as the main character, the guy, like, I mean, we've seen it.
If you look at the two most recent really successful Irish films are Room and Brooklyn. They're the two that went
and
to the Oscars.
And if I'm not married, would I add into that?
Yeah,
no,
but
successful.
They were co-productions internationally.
Yeah,
no, but like, look, the leads.
They're both female-driven leads. They're both male-directors,
well, I mean,
but they're both female-driven leads. So.
Even internationally, the top three films at the US box office last year were all female-led, right?
Yeah,
I mean, 51% of the Irish population is female.
I mean, you think
so
the fact that, like, you know, like box office would say it should be enough to shift the sands. Never mind, like, that you should be doing it anyway.
Yeah.
But, like, the fact that you're making money out of it, you know.
But don't worry, shared universes are the lessons that were taken from this. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And we're finally getting
the
Black Widow independent solo movie.
Is it actually happening, or is
it's
just they've got a writer attached?
It's literally a decade after it should have happened.
There's no point in making a Black Widow movie at this stage of the game, to be honest. Yeah. Because even, like, I mean, Scarlett herself is probably completely sick of that part.
Yeah, possibly so. I mean,
But to go back to what we were saying, I do, like, I don't know.
Well, Black Panther should have been done a decade ago, like.
I feel quite strongly that it's actually in some ways kind of redundant to set up funding strands for people and then expect them to have production companies attached. It just doesn't feel very welcoming of new talent.
No,
already have to batter down that additional door. I get the wider context in which you're saying, but it's
one
just
of the four strands.
Otherwise it just seems a bit futile to even pay lip service.
One of the four
idea,
things.
I mean?
Yeah, no, it's fair. But one of the four things that all films are judged on in terms of Irish Film Board funding is commercial appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And so that one, if you do have a producer attached to it, and even better, if you also have a distributor attached to it, you automatically have commercial appeal. So you tick that box.
Something will get made if they fund it.
Yeah,
so
they won't be stuck at the end getting an Irish Times article about how much money
unless you're
getting.
Jim Sheridan, which will just get money forever and ever. You can edit it out now.
But the thing, the thing about Jim Sheridan gets money because of legacy issues.
I know, but
if he does hit again and the film board are not attached to it, all of the questions will be, why were they not?
Yeah, particularly given his pedigree.
Yeah,
he's probably not going to hit again.
I know.
I would suggest
as
respectfully as possible.
Jay, we'll put you on the Irish Film Board and you can be the sacrificial lamb when that happens.
Oh, God, I'd love to be.
That would actually be amazing.
Give me a year, lads. Give me a year. And whatever, it won't be boring.
Yeah, like you take a year long sabbatical
and I'll
handle things here. And then it'll be like that community gift where they walk in and
if I don't do anything successful.
This is the darkest time.
If there's not a film that's successful at the end of it, I'll walk away and say, fair enough. But if, by God, I bring success, the megalomania you will not see.
Sitting there smoking a cigar, Jay Coyle has a problem.
Kiss this man's feet, he's a writer.
Right, back to the IFTAs. So the IFTAs, Maudie was the big recipient in terms of nominees.
Just seen this.
Yeah, so we got six nominations.
It's okay.
It struggles to be okay.
It's hard to be good when you've seen Walk Hard. And that's
the
problem.
One of the problems that I have with Maudie, and it's a thing indicative of the filmmaker, and I mean, Aisling Walsh is a very good filmmaker.
Very talented,
She's a lovely person as well, but she has a TV background. And Maudie plays like a made-for-TV film.
But I watched it at home, so I was fine in that regard. I think it probably worked better than... it's not particularly cinematic, and it's one location, essentially. It kind of works better on watching on TV.
And the central performance of Sally Hawkins is great.
Oh, no, she's
fantastic.
And Ethan Hawke plays Captain Birdseye. So
yeah,
that's
your issue.
Which is
but when you're
I can't hear the
Captain
Stable. It's like, this is so weird. Why is he playing Captain Birdseye?
I know, but when you're pitching
anyway,
it as a serious dramatic biopic, that tends to jar a bit. Like,
I love it. He commits to everything he does, no matter what his genre or anything.
There's never a moment where
Ethan Hawke
goes, was
he looks. This is the first time I've seen him a little uncomfortable in something that he doesn't quite know what he's supposed to be doing.
I thought he knew what he was doing. That was part of the issue. It was just not what the film needed.
Oh, I don't know.
I thought he committed. Like he always does.
It was strange. But anyway, but it was kind of weird Captain Save a Boy.
I feel like, yeah, I feel like he maybe should have taken him aside and said, look, you're at 10 now.
Yeah,
go down to 7.
We'll give you 8 at the big moments, but 7 is kind of fine here. Yeah.
So Maudie is up against some of the other big films from last year and some that are still up to come out this year. So Cardboard Gangsters, which was the highest grossing Irish film of last year.
Yep.
Mark O'Connor's urban drama, gritty urban drama, with one of the best chainsaw scenes that's ever been seen in an Irish film, possibly the best chainsaw scene.
I love the category, yeah.
It's a pretty good chainsaw scene.
Watch out for the listicle on Scanon. Top chainsaw scenes in Irish cinema.
I would love to write that. But anyway.
I think Jay just pitched an article.
I did.
Handsome Devil.
Good, I like Handsome Devil.
It's nice. It's nice. That's about the worst thing to say.
Which is...
Like, it's pleasant, but I know the story to say it again.
Yeah, I wouldn't watch it again. Why
is Andrew Scott being Dead Poets Society? Like, why is he doing Robin Williams? Like, why? Anyway, sorry. Go on now.
And it's Mo Dunford's Pascal as the grumpy
as the rugby
coach.
I've an aversion. I've an aversion to rugby anyway. So that's
grumpy is one adjective to use. Yes.
Yorgos Lanthimos' Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Yes. Yes.
Something we can all agree on.
Yeah, finally.
The only one of us who has kids, we should point out.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Yeah,
influenced
yeah.
his decision.
Yeah, yeah, ish.
Everything you hold dear.
The lobster's better.
No, it's not.
No.
I don't think it is.
No, I think this is a bit more of a slow boil.
Mm. Michael Inside.
Isn't out until February, I believe, is it?
Later. It's out
could if to stop doing this, though? Could he just actually have films that... Because this is starting to irritate me each year. Like, right. like just
yeah.
films that are coming out months later when you're nominated. Nobody has seen them. It seems
but it means,
weird. When
but
they,
it means the poster can say you've got a winner.
But I,
and I mean,
but
that's
we have to stop thinking of our industry
it.
That way, though. It's like, I celebrate what you've done. Because our films have been pretty successful last year. It's like,
there was a year when all of the nominees... did not receive
You're
a theatrical distribution.
I'll find that. I want that list. Later, really.
Do you have that list?
I don't have it on.
Dig that up now.
Yeah. Okay.
Isn't that kind of a moot point then? Because like, what's the point of holding the awards if they're not going to be released?
Yeah, so the criteria...
Other than to give each other a smack in the back.
Oh, the criteria.
Yeah,
the
you have to
go to
the cinema for X amount of time,
no,
I think, isn't it?
No, no, the criteria...
You have to do that.
The criteria for qualifying for IFTA is that you have to have screened either festival as a festival or theatrically, so either or.
For
so all about Eva is in. No,
one
no,
showing.
If you're at a
between
festival.
Between January 1st and the 31st of January of the following year.
So you've
got 13 months.
You've got 13
months and you have to have screened theatrically or at any one festival.
Why do we destroy our industry?
All about
Why
Eva.
Do we destroy
all about Eva could have made it, Jay.
This
if only
actually
we pushed
starting
it more.
To sound more futile and ridiculous than I originally thought.
Yeah. It is. Like, it's like...
What is the point?
We've actually had a pretty successful like last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah,
why not celebrate the films
which
as
is,
they've
which
happened?
Is why you now get the case where Michael Inside will not be released until Q2 of this year.
Yeah, as a
and,
result. Cause
and the Breadwinner.
And the Breadwinner,
bread
which
winner.
Isn't out...
Till June or something.
But the Breadwinner is the same thing you had with Song of the Sea, where it tours internationally and all Irish audiences who are, in theory, like... the basis and backbone of the film
no.
end up getting a leftover.
Yeah, but
no, but
not in the case of the Breadwinner.
But I know not
the
financial.
Afghani story.
But it
okay,
could
but
be.
It's
yeah.
animated
yeah.
by an Irish
people,
studio
people.
And
not. But the other two from Carter Saloon, yes, they were
yeah.
they were Irish stories. But the problem that it has, the problem that the Breadwinner has, is that it's Studio Canal that decide when they release it. So
yeah.
which should have been in autumn as an art house release.
Yeah,
when
because it will never
compete
probably
not
anime
considered
film
an important market.
No, we're not. Which is ironic,
so.
Given that we produce.
But yeah, can I also say
this
may potentially this may potentially be a mean thing to say, and if people have statistics to counter it, then I'm happy to prove wrong. But you know when you say that like it gives you an award to slap on the movie's poster, for instance, nominated for IFTA, whatever. Do people care that much compared to say nominated for Academy Award, Golden Globe, whatever?
I think that like Irish films are traditionally a hard sell to Irish audiences, right? So if you can say award winning, you don't have to specify which
award. But do you think Irish
award.
Audiences attach that much credibility to it?
They
especially
really
if these
don't.
Are films
I don't
that
I,
haven't come out yet that
well,
they know nothing about.
I would argue looking at the top 10 this week where like Three Billboards does very well with an Irish connection and awards pedigree, I would say
genuine
that's a large
Irish
part
connection.
Of it.
I would argue that Cardboard Gangsters has no Irish Film Board funding and it's the most successful film of the year
and
without any awards thing on it
the
and it was an 18 certificate
the most successful
nobody
documentary
knows anything like
was right. Conor McGregor's Notorious which also didn't have Irish film
but there you
it.
Go I mean
When was the last time that happened? Never.
Yep.
Is the answer. The answer is never. Before okay,
but
the film board
but
was
doesn't
founded.
Make, doesn't make the whole thing a bit of a folly then? In this, in like in terms of like,
it's a very depressing podcast.
I don't think it is. I mean, I think 4 or 5 years ago, I can see why films are held over to be kind of celebrated because we didn't have enough films that were A, got into the cinemas, or B, were successful.
Yeah,
but I think the last few years have proved that to quite the opposite effect. Like, because IFTA has nothing to do with the Irish Film Board, right?
No.
Right. So where's the Irish Film Board's awards?
Yeah, but that'd be like
but
BAFTA.
They can't.
That'd be
yeah,
like
but
B-
why not
the
like
BFI
BAFTA?
Holding an award.
Okay.
The BFI doesn't.
You
BAFTA
can't, you
does.
Can't,
but BAFTA, okay.
You
but
can't
some,
do that because it's preferencing like your own productions and stuff.
But that's what IFTA does.
But BAFTA does anyway, and so does IFTA.
No, IFTA.
No, they're separate.
IFTA is the Irish Film and Television Academy. So basically, it is.
We have an
but,
Irish Film and Television Academy. Sorry,
so,
this is never.
So it's
it
a word.
It is made up of members, paying members who are. Actively involved in the Irish film industry, same as BAFTA. BAFTA is the same, but
except on a minute scale. I
yeah, but see, BAFTA is British, so I mean they're already playing with 12.5 times the population. So you,
but they're BAFTA. BAFTA not slightly move at the times.
They do.
Oh, yeah.
BAFTA
that's
have
my
that,
point,
have that
though.
Rising Star Award.
Yeah, BAFTA
voted for by the public, isn't it?
If that also have a Rising Star Award.
Publicly voted.
It is not publicly voted.
Hmm?
But they do have a rising.
The problem with you know,
which they hold
like,
in conjunction with
it all. It all feels a little chummy. It all feels a little.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a small
high-fivey.
Nation. We're a small nation.
It doesn't matter. You can still do something right.
Yeah.
Success of Irish film the last few years would suggest that we're doing pretty well in the production end of it.
Yeah.
So
I think there
it
is
doesn't
room
seem.
For...
It wouldn't seem very difficult to reward that in a real way.
But there's a vested
interest.
Jay
is saying it's time for a cult.
And I realise some may disagree here, but there is a vested interest, I think, in, and not just in the Irish film industry, in many film industries, in portraying a certain image of Ireland, which may lead them to favour certain productions slash people over others, which is not always with the zeitgeist, so to speak.
Or of this century, sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Or last century.
Yeah, and until that kind of attitude changes, and like I said, it's not limited to Ireland. That happens
no,
to several countries.
No, it's not. It's definitely not.
Like that's what you're up against.
I just listen.
That's why, as I have said elsewhere, seeing something like, for example, A Date for Mad Mary do really well last. Was 2 years ago now? Would it be? Was it last
well,
year?
Yeah,
or
no,
2016?
But yeah, 2016. Yeah.
Yeah,
but
it, it felt different to me.
Yeah.
Like it felt like a realistic portrayal of Irish life.
So we will we'll move on to the top 10. We will get away from
yes.
Super.
Bring it on.
Into part 3 at 10. Ferdinand.
What is Ferdinand?
What a load
it's
of
an
bull.
Animation, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
It's John Cena as a bull who doesn't like to be rough. Like he's basically he's a very sensitive soul, and therefore you've got that basic comedy setup of a, you know, an animal that doesn't conform to
it's based on a children's book that has been banned in a number of places, including in Nazi Germany.
Why was it banned in Nazi Germany?
Oh, this is one of these
I know
things.
It's an endorsement of like in the book that it was banned in Nazi Germany.
But it's just one of these things that the book gets banned, got banned because I have reasons.
I'm just quite surprised because for some reason I thought, I don't know if any of you remember this show, but there was a TV show about like, was he a little pig called Jakers or something like that? I can't remember his name. Anyway, he had a friend who was a bull whose name was Fernando, and for some reason I thought Ferdinand was Fernando and was very surprised to discover it had no relation to this TV show.
Okay. Maybe it was named in honor of the book.
Yeah.
Maybe it was named in honor of the book character.
No, I know very little about it. It's animated.
It's made money.
Doing well. Made
yeah.
So far, it's made $1.2 million.
How could someone make that when I've never even heard of it?
Animated movie.
It kind of depresses me.
How have not even heard of it?
These are the things that make money in Ireland. It's
yeah.
funny
know,
though,
it's,
and we wonder why they don't care about us as a market.
Well, no, but the Disney, like the animation film, like Minions and Despicable Me 3 will clean up because you've got to have something to take the kids to, and Ferdinand fills that.
Plus, there are a lot of kids in this country.
That's true.
Yes.
So many kids.
I have two of them. At 9, Pitch Perfect 3.
I almost
forgot that was out.
Yeah, see, I've seen the first two. I didn't get
so
to
do
see
I.
this one yet.
So
I really like the first one. The second one was pointless, and I imagine the third one.
And the second one was far too long. For
the
first
one was perfect,
it.
So it didn't really need a sequel.
Was
it was just, like, just self-detained.
Up there with great films, just didn't need a sequel. But,
yeah.
You know.
But I guess they got an irresistible pitch.
I'll still watch it, and I probably won't get to the cinema to see it, but I will watch it at some point.
Yeah, I'll watch it
a bit,
like,
because I like Anna Kendrick and I like various others. So, yeah. I can't remember names.
Star Wars, The Last Jedi, with 4.7 million.
But is this the version that's been edited to remove all the female characters and only runs 45 minutes? That is the question.
No, but it doesn't remove all the female characters because Luke still milks the cow.
I like that they left that in there. Because, of course, having breasts is the only criteria which would allow an MRI to be a female
character. I thought the stupid cow milking scene was something we could all agree on, no matter what our respective
I love it because it winds up that sort of fan. And particularly the way that he looks at the camera as he's doing it, it's... I quite admire that the film left that in.
But they removed the fish nuns. Because the fish nuns are great as just sort of physical comedy.
No.
It's not a very good film, though, to say.
It's
sadly.
Grand. It's ambitious, which I admire.
But you also admire the ambition of Batman v Superman. Incidentally, it's a terrible film.
It's a fair point.
All right, then.
I had to listen to not only your podcast on that, but also Graham's podcast on that.
It was the same episode, Niall.
Yeah, I know, but I'm curious.
And it was Graham's idea. You listened to it twice from both perspectives.
I was trying to figure out if there was any difference between the two, but no, there was not. But you know.
Yeah. It's not good. There's a big sagging middle.
It's a film that exists.
Yeah,
but the thing about The Last Jedi, the nice thing I can say about it
is it winds up the right people. Like, my criticism of The Last Jedi is that it's not ambitious enough.
I think it's gotten a lot of attention for winding up the fanboys, which is, like, I don't really care what they think. But there's a lot of other people with legitimate grievances who aren't fanboys.
Yeah, see,
and a lot of them are long-time Star Wars fans.
I grew up... Like, with Return of the Jedi duvet sets and all the rest, I have a Millennium Falcon in my house.
Yeah. Nobody is shocked with it.
No. So
I'm a little shocked.
I would have been, and I still am, a Star Wars geek at the moment. I don't have them on today, but I usually have R2-D2 or C-3PO socks on. I don't have them on today. But, so there are these, you know, but The Last Jedi didn't wind me up in any way, shape, or form, because...
It just annoys me.
I'm more mature than that.
Yeah,
I'm not
exactly
that.
Like, I mean, that's the thing when people talk about, like, mocking fans and stuff. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
The idea is it's mocking fans who are so immature that they can't stand the idea that Luke might drink green milk.
That was hilarious when he chucked the lightsaber over his shoulder.
Yeah,
that was hilarious.
My issue, though, is that everything the film does, like, the film tries to do several bold things, but it pulls back at every moment. So, like, he throws the lightsaber away, but it has to be recovered. You have the scene with Leia.
She should have died. Rare and dead.
Okay, we're going for spoilers.
That's a bad scene.
It's been out for a month and a half.
It's a bad scene.
Her resurrection is
her Mary Poppins
scene.
Is back into
yeah.
the...
Yeah. I was actually...
Superman. Yeah.
I think that might have been the point when...
I was unrarely agog.
That was a dreadful scene.
It is a dreadful scene.
I remember hearing, like, a ripple of slightly disbelieving laughter in the cinema that moment where people are like, is this really happening?
Why?
You know?
But yeah, that's the thing. So every time the movie tries to do something bold and then, like, daring, it pulls itself back from the abyss.
Except when it kills Snoke.
No, well, okay, yes. Yes. No. And when it reveals Rey's parents. I like the reveal of Rey's parents.
That scene, the Red Room of Pain
the
or Pleasure.
The Kurosawa scene,
that scene...
Yeah.
Perfect.
I can see, like, whenever it comes out on DVD or whatever, if somebody could just put that scene, just that one scene on YouTube, that'll be the one bit I rewatch, and I'll just pretend the rest of the film doesn't
exist. I think there's a good 100-minute film about letting go of the past in the context of Star Wars in there somewhere.
Yeah, if you
lose
all of the
film.
Casino planet scene, because that's
But you know what's really frustrating about that? Is that, like, everything that they try to establish with the casino planet, they could have done quicker and more efficiently if they had just taken the two of them and put them on, like, the bloody... like Death Star what's the yoke that the First Order
big
are on
ship.
The big ship
smuggled on board that they literally could have seen anything they could have seen arms deals going down, children stormtroopers being indoctrinated, like all of these terrible things, that the same messages they were trying to get across without the stupid poxy bloody casino planet that goes on for half an hour.
But on the other hand, the
and has no point
but on
overall.
The other hand, the casino planet does give us Justin Theroux. Justin Theroux.
I quite like Justin Theroux, and we're pure leftovers fans there saying that. But what I will say is, like, they felt like B plots being elevated to A plots, and that's the real problem.
Yeah. That felt like a first draft.
Mentioning spoilers, Poe Dameron should have been executed at the end of the film.
I do like Kelly Marie Tran as an action
hero.
She
was good.
I enjoyed it until they made her love interest.
Then it got.
Well, also, suicide bombing is also only good if it's done by Laura Dern.
But the thing is that there's no way that the rebellion wins without being terrorists.
Yeah,
there is no way.
They're trying to manufacture that when it can't be manufactured.
And maybe making a movie after 9/11 where your heroes are terrorists, and like you have to basically deal with that in some way, shape, or form. But yeah, anyway, so
it's a bit of a cowardice of a film in that way. All right, move on.
I did love Luke and his ending.
Luke's arc was fantastic.
Yeah, because
Luke's final scene was the one thing that got an actual emotion, a positive emotional response.
That was
just,
very right?
I was like,
him standing there and being
wiping,
subjected to the unleashing of an arsenal.
Do you
and
think
then
you got
it's him? Like, yeah, it's like, nope, still there.
I don't like the comedy elements, so I have to say. I don't, like...
If they were dramatic,
it's too Spaceballs for me.
Yeah.
And
well, the bit where Donald Gleason stuff is ridiculous, particularly because he is a Nazi.
That
was kind of funny at the start.
No, it wasn't. It was kind of funny.
No.
The only bit I laughed at was, and it was a dry cleaning joke, was when the thing came down, the ship was an iron, and I was like, I laughed at
that. That was an amazing
because that was
show,
such a nerdy thing for me. But
that was very funny.
I don't think that worked for me, because when I saw it, I was like, that looks like an iron.
That's what my wife said to me.
The only
part
like that, because I used to do that. But
I think
I
might have been so actively annoyed at that stage.
That
joke's your
whole
that
start
off
was always like, lads, this is Spaceballs, what he's doing. This
awful.
Is this is terrible.
Was it,
or even the bit where he gets thrown around inside.
Oh, it's so silly. Oh, it's a terrible film. Go on.
They've given that guy a whole bloody trilogy. We're in for a lot of money.
I'm actually quite looking forward to his trilogy with
that.
Rian can direct, so I have no issue with that, but he does need to be.
And he seems to.
They're not necessarily giving him a trilogy already. He's just. He's in charge of the trilogy as opposed to not necessarily directing them. That's my reading of it.
Anyway, at 7, it's All the Money in the World.
And it turns out it went to Mark Wahlberg.
All the Money in the World? Yeah, oh well. Spoiler. Who then, after being publicly shamed for a week,
forcibly donating it.
I think we're missing the main story here is that Ridley Scott's delivered yet another terrible movie for the last, like, 25th year.
Hold on, Jay.
It's not terrible.
Well, you know it's terrible. It's deep down in your bitter heart.
Have you
seen
it, Jay?
Of course I haven't seen it. Better things to be done with time.
I feel like you sitting here.
I saw the trailer.
There's a lot of people staring directly into the camera now, like...
I feel like Jay lecturing us on how terrible the movie he hasn't seen
is. It's not Dr. Evil coming out and going, oh, there's money in the world. You know, it's
like... Christopher Plummer is fantastic. There's some very good ideas in there. The film is horribly structured. Like, the film, for all the fact that Ridley Scott could replace Kevin Spacey so efficiently and so easily, points to the biggest problem with the film, which is that all the three plot strands in it have no correlation to one another.
Also,
he could shoot a third of the
film.
Also,
you can do it really quickly because he's a hack.
Okay, Jay. We're going to put you in the... Gonna put you in the bold corner. Reshooting a film with
He's got millions. He just brings them there and shoots them. If he's on his own, who cares?
So does he have millions or does Mark Wahlberg?
They have millions. The film production.
They have literally all the money in the world.
The organizational skill that it takes to orchestrate something like that is nothing short of astounding for a man who is 80 years old.
But it's like he's calling them all. They've literally a studio of hundreds to do this, Darren. It's not one person. He just gets the point and say, just say what Kevin Spacey said there before he was. Kevin Spacey.
Jay! let's ignore the fact that you haven't seen the film. When was the last
ever
film
directed
a film?
How hard could it be?
Ron Howard can do it.
Ron Howard is making a massive career of it, and he's terrible.
Well, in fairness,
Ridley
I'm,
Scott has made a good film
sorry,
in 30 years.
You,
and he's,
Jay. I actually missed
can,
this.
Can we go back to the Ron Howard?
Can we leave Ron Howard out?
No.
I like Ron Howard too.
And the Star Wars thing is that Disney are actively underselling
film.
It.
That's going to be a perfect
kind
Ron
of
Howard
worrying,
film.
I'm really, really annoyed at the fact that I am now actively anticipating the Han Solo movie, something I had zero interest before because
really?
I feel like...
Is Ron Howard that brought your interest? Please tell me that.
Because I didn't get a Star Wars movie last month
true.
When I was told that I would. So now I have to wait for
Han's
the bloody Han Solo
movie. Will be what all Ron Howard films are. Really nice, competent, and forgettable.
Right, while we're talking...
At this stage, after The Last Jedi, I
that.
Accept
okay.
that.
I like ambitious.
No, while we're talking about The Greatest Showman, at 6, it's The Greatest Showman.
Ew, musical.
I didn't see it.
Sorry, that Hugh Jackman...
musical.
Grace doesn't like musicals.
Grace also, don't with no music.
Grace talks in the third person, which is really worrying.
I feel like it's one of my brand things. I complain about musicals.
I think
it's
not
so much
musicals and film because I don't really watch many of them because I don't like them. But musical episodes and TV shows were the worst fucking idea of all time, and people keep
except
doing
for Crazy
them.
Ass Girlfriend because that's
that's
the whole
phenomenal.
Show.
Buffy.
I don't like that episode. I'm in the minority, but I don't. That started it. I blame that.
Grace, I feel like if I ever host a podcast episode about a musical film, I should invite you on as a guest, I think.
Yes,
you should. We could probably have some good conversations.
What, you mean
that.
One of, like, the 5 musicals I actually like?
I mean, what are the odds that we land on one in the next, like, couple of weeks? I
favorite
think that would be absurd.
Favorite musical?
I do like Moulin Rouge. Or no, maybe The Nightmare Before Christmas ranks above that.
I had a Moulin Rouge
or even the South Park movie.
College.
Yeah, South Park movie's right up there for me.
But yeah, I'm just,
my love of Baz Luhrmann knows no bounds.
I'm just
Jesus, even Australian.
I'm just happy that Hugh Jackman got to make that movie. I am glad for him.
He's had a hard run of it, really, hasn't he?
I feel like,
as
you know.
You.
Oh, God, it's very difficult to play.
Sorry, poor you. I really feel for him.
Someone's keeping the white man down again.
He seems like a nice guy.
No, he is. I'm glad he got that out of his system. Now just go back and play Logan and stop being an
idiot. I like when he sings. Yeah, he's
got one of them. He's like, yeah, can you do another X-Men? Okay, sure.
Does he sound like a turkey the same way he did in Les Mis?
Really? Hugh Jackman was the issue in Les Mis?
I don't remember much of Les Mis.
There's a huge problems in Les Mis before we get to
Jackman.
I think it's
the
problem is another actor, Crowe.
I like Russell Crowe in it.
I admire his gumption.
So do I. He's terrible, but I like Russell Crowe.
His dead scene is interesting.
You admire his gumption.
I do.
I really like
Les Mis. He can't sing, but he really...
I mean, I really like Les Mis.
I don't mind it for half it until it goes full Tory with...
full Tory.
You never go full Tory.
What's your man's face? The young guy that everybody hates.
Ed Redmayne.
Yeah, him. Once it goes full Tory with him,
I got it in one.
You did. See, everybody knows everybody hates him. He's this generation's Johnny Depp. But anyway,
and
let's move on.
Speaking of Eddie Redmayne and Johnny Depp, fantastic piece.
Yeah,
I
have a hard pass.
Oh yeah.
Hard pass on anything Harry Potter related.
Yeah.
At 5, Darkest Hour.
Gary
Oldman, his Oscar.
I know
Dullest
we,
Hour. Our,
I know
our
that we've actually, we've all been talking about this for a while, but when I hear the name Darkest Hour, I still think of the Emil Hirsch movie about the electricity monsters in Moscow.
What?
Yes.
Why do I remember
the
that?
Darkest Hour.
I've never heard of this. What is this?
Oh, this
I
was,
haven't
yeah.
seen it now. I just remember
yeah,
it.
Yeah, this
yet.
Is a relatively
title,
big deal about
like
2 years ago.
Oh.
It was around, it was like a March release.
What's
between...
his name? It's a Russian director.
Timur Bekmambetov.
Well, yeah,
yes.
the guy
who did Night Watch and Day Watch, right?
Yeah, and did Nine.
God, Night Watch. I was like, oh, it's good. Then you watch Day Watch. Like, oh man, this guy can't direct. I remember that.
He did Nine.
Joining Jay's Elite Club of Ridley Scott and Ron Howard and Steven Spielberg on a bad day.
Spielberg's okay.
Spielberg's okay.
Yeah.
I like El Stevo.
I miss you, Jay.
Emil Hirsch running around Moscow trying to put electricity back into the world.
This sounds kind of amazing.
Yeah.
I think it was a solid like one-star turkey.
I think I'd hate watch this one.
Yeah, you could probably watch it with
right up there with Diana.
The crack, you know?
Sometimes you perform the surgery.
Or sometimes the surgery performs the greatest comedy there has ever been made.
Yeah.
At 4, Insidious... The last key.
I don't like any of these films.
The last Insidious one wasn't bad.
I've only
is that
seen
the 2 hour, 3 hour
one?
Is that
one? Like.
What?
No, it's The Conjuring. Isn't
you're
it?
Thinking of The Conjuring 2.
I enjoyed The Conjuring 2.
The Conjuring 2 is
4 weeks.
The Conjuring 2 is like a blockbuster horror film.
It's
like
2.5 hours or something.
It's a horror film with a car chase. Like, I mean, what else?
90 minutes is what you want from a horror film. It's not two or three.
I enjoyed The Conjuring 2.
I like.
Oh, good God, you're all crazy.
The Conjuring films are amazing because they're like. Warner Brothers' most successful attempt to build a shared universe. They're probably the second most successful shared universe
Darren,
in film,
just
which
stop
is astounding.
Stop
no,
it.
Tell like if I had told you 2-5 years ago that like the most successful model of the Marvel Universe would be a bunch of weird horror films set in the 70s.
I wouldn't have believed you. Yeah. Of course I wouldn't. Who would believe that?
I know, it's
based
amazing.
Around two quite yeah. weird people.
Two very weird, fraudulent,
very odd people.
Cynical individuals.
Anyway,
yeah.
I'm not seeing the
Insidious. Yeah, the last
it.
Key is not something that. Yeah, I mean.
I don't think it'll be a key
like
omission
you like,
from your.
No,
from your
I certainly will not.
At 3, and this is the box office sensation to end
it's
all
amazing.
Box office sensation. This is a film that makes money despite being, well, a Jumanji film. It's Jumanji! Welcome to the jungle.
Only the second worst movie starring The Rock from last year.
This thing, if you were to take it as a 2017 release, is tracking to be the fifth highest grossing film of the year.
It's amazing. Jake has that directed.
Yes.
Which is
yeah.
like, he used to be somebody, didn't he?
And it has Colin Hanks in it for no reason.
Colin Hanks
is
wow.
not a good actor.
It also has it's also a film in which all of the male characters have multiple layers, and the only notable female character
has
a bare midriff
yeah.
and hot pants.
So a Hollywood film then.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Poor
character. I'm gonna pass.
I love the original Jumanji.
I can't remember.
Like
I have seen it,
but
I can't remember.
It came out when I was 7. Watched it a lot. Really
was
like it.
Was it Saruta was the first attempt at a sequel?
It was a kind of spin-off version thing.
Yes, I can't remember Jumanji.
John
at
Favreau
all.
Doing space.
I think it's
Jumanji.
Great.
The thing about what Jumanji proves beyond anything else is that The Rock is awesome.
Would you go so far as to say The Rock is a solid foundation for an action film? You got to build on a bedrock.
Yeah, it's just that you put The Rock in a film, even like the incredibly bad Baywatch, and it makes it more watchable. That's the thing. It's
not watchable enough to actually watch it, though.
I disagree. having actually watched
yeah,
it.
Yeah, God help you.
I
God
know.
Help you all.
At 2, Coco, in a preview weekend.
Yes, its premiere was during the week after it had placed second in the rankings, which is amazing.
Which?
Apparently Pixar back on form.
Oh,
Coco.
It looks like Day of the Dead, though.
It is, there was a release a couple of years ago as well.
The Book
Dia
of the
Dead.
Mortos. Book of the Dead.
Yeah.
Yes. Or the Book of Life.
Book of Life.
Yes,
which I quite
actually,
liked,
yeah.
This is the one where Disney famously tried to copyright the phrase Day of the Dead, which caused some issues with Mexico.
Well, it would, though.
As one might expect. If you want a metaphor for like Disney's overreach, it's not buying Fox.
Or
adding
the things that they did with the LA Times.
It's trying to copyright the concept of like one of
Mexican
the most important
holiday.
Mexican holidays.
You should try to buy Patrick's Day and watch us.
Well, in fairness, we might have been spared Spectre. But, you know.
Oh yeah, the product placement at the start.
I could live with that. That would have been
alright.
It's such a bad film.
It was unbelievably bad. I'd heard that a lot of people
you
didn't like it, but I was like, yeah. And then I put it on, and I was just like, how did this get made? It's so terrible.
Yeah, Spectre is bad.
I liked the first hour.
Anyway, Coco is number 2, and it's out this week. So
grand.
At 1. Three Billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri.
And Jay starts rolling up his sleeves.
And then I feel my energy ebbing away.
Oh!
Oh, yeah.
Don't worry, I'll billboard you up again.
It's first of all, the first thing I will say, and I've said this to Darren already, I'm glad it's successful in the context of dramatic films doing
it's
well
an original
and all.
Property.
Yeah, and all that kind of jazz, right?
You say that now until 4 billboards.
Similarly to kind of films like Mother that get made that you generally don't get made anymore. This is a good thing.
I was
Jay has said his obligatory good thing.
The common denominator with those films are folk that are not very good.
I was listening to our end of year podcast the other day and really enjoying how enraged everyone got over Mother while also saying, but it's a good thing it got made.
And I was never enraged over Mother.
Yeah. I was.
It was a heated debate.
I detest Mother and I'm not sure it was a good thing that was made.
No, maybe not. But Three Billboards is...
I am happy that it got made and I think it's an interesting film. Anyway.
Three Billboards on Mother.
Mother.
All right, you like Three Billboards.
I do. I love Three Billboards.
I do not.
Love? How do you love Three Billboards?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's a movie about how, like, anger and outrage fuels, like, a fire that burns and consumes everything that it touches. It's not a movie about what people have been marketing it about, which, in fact, is a horribly tone-deaf movie to release in the context of, like, the Me Too movement or try to brand Frances McDormand's character as, like, a feminist icon. It's not that at all.
No.
Instead, it's an appeal to moderation. It's an understanding that nothing
it's
but
an
hatred
appeal
will
to moderation?
Yeah, hatred consumes us all. Fire burns. If you allow it to burn uncontrollably, it will destroy you and everything you care about.
Okay.
Tumbleweeds.
Right. No, the thing about Three Billboards is it uses offensive language. It's got the characters who are irredeemably awful. It has, and
are not redeemed.
Yeah, but...
Well, they are.
No, they're not.
I guess they are.
No, they're not.
This new Twitter war of Three Billboards.
I know it is, yeah.
And bloody Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
Listen, right.
I love Sam Rockwell. His character is awful.
Right.
Yes, his character is awful. And it's a good thing he's not redeemed at the end of the
not
film.
Not only does he redeem, he's like a phoenix from the flames.
Okay.
I mean,
literally.
For the love of Jehovah.
Okay, what happens at the end of Three Billboards?
Oh, you understand what happens at the end of it.
Okay.
Nothing happens. It's a terrible end to a film.
Okay. At the end of Three Billboards, the
are
characters...
We're not spoiling it.
Okay, fine. What needs to happen for it to be a redemption movie almost happens, and then the film swerves sharply left, denying those characters their redemption, and instead condemning them to damnation.
I disagree.
Okay.
Because I think they back out of that right at the end.
Okay.
So I don't think that happens at all.
Okay.
I think it likes the idea of that. But it does not commit to it. And there are so many problems before we even get to that. I don't mind any characters. Like, if you know what you're doing as a director and a writer-director, and you have characters that are racist or kind of appeared English, he was employed again, just basically employed so they can call him a midget. He's not in the film for any other real reason, right? But even if I'll accept all of that from a writer that's doing this for a reason. Like, you can use whatever language you want, and you can use whatever. My worry is when filmmakers like to do these things because they like to hear people say the words that they cannot use.
Also, for the second time in three films.
Kind of like the way Tarantino does that.
Yes. Yeah. There's an element that I've allowed Tarantino leeway because I think he's a phenomenal filmmaker, and in Jackie Brown, I always thought he knew exactly where he was at.
Yeah.
But there's a certain element of filmmaking that... Actually, Shane McGowan put it best, if you want to put it this way. He never says the word faggot anymore when he sings Fair Tale to New York. And there's a conversation around that, and how a lot of people love it at Christmas because they get to shout it out drunk because they never get to say words like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a kind of idea around words and how words are used.
Yeah.
And the responsibility around how words are used.
Yeah.
And I think Michael McDonagh and Niall... Martin McDonagh, Niall kind of touched on it in terms of tone deaf. He wants... I don't mind the heightened kind of thing which in Bruges had in terms of, like, you know, hell and kind of limbo, which Bruges is essentially.
Yeah,
and the kind of
purgatory.
Because that's heightened, and the world exists in that kind of universe that, you know, there's a kind of a price to pay for all this kind of thing. And I like that.
You also see the you know, he's going to look for the sex show with the midges and stuff, but it's through a haze,
yeah,
for a fog.
Yeah, and there's grief and loss, and there's a reason for him to be there, all that kind of thing, right? Martin McDonagh is trying to do two things here. He's trying to be, and what you were kind of saying earlier, as a kind of rage and kind of consuming film, that's there, right? And that gives you the license to be the heightened kind,
like,
of...
literally about fire.
Yeah, right.
And how dangerous fire is.
But what it also tries to be, tries to be a film about grief, and about a dramatic film about grief, alongside it, and fails at that. And when you... But it does, though, Darren. It tries to have both. And it pays lip service to grief, because there's no real loss. The character that dies is not even a character.
Okay.
She's not really mourned. She's not really. Not in any significant way. And doesn't really feel, other than a prop device, to exist in any real shape or form. The wording that's used in the last time they see each other is utterly, utterly dreadful in the context of the film, and it thinks it's being funny.
It's
Terry McMahon-esque, if you will.
It doesn't think it's being funny. It thinks it's being smart.
And
it doesn't think it's being smart.
It bloody does. It's show-offy in the way
it's
screen.
Show-offy.
Yes, it is. It's like, oh, and then you get the drama about it. Then
Dramatic irony.
Yeah, and that's, but it's clunky and tone deaf and no. No. And don't even get me started on CGI, dear.
Okay, well...
CGI, dear.
I was killed
in a sacred way.
Yes. I responded to its study of grief. I thought that its study of grief was quite insightful. I think the idea that when you grieve, you feel anger. And you feel it burning inside you, and you need that to get out of bed. There's an amazing sequence in the film where a character literally gets themselves out of bed using anger to push themselves out of the stupor that they're in. And I found that incredibly moving.
I would as well if it wasn't all one note. Like, that's... And I have to say, and I'm controversial to say this, I love Frances McDormand, but I don't think she's great in this. Okay. I think she's got one... It's a one-note role that she can play very well, and she's a terrific actress.
I don't think it's one note at all.
I think it is. I don't think there's anything to it. I think it's just, it's by the by, kind of generic anger,
but it's
revenge.
Like, it's not anger. It's mourning. It's the fact that she turns the site where her daughter was killed into a memorial. Those billboards are not about expressing anything to the world. They're about constructing a tombstone she can see from
all
her
of
house.
That I agree with.
Okay.
Right? But if you're a filmmaker, you've got to make that work. And I don't think he makes this work.
Right. I think he does.
I don't. In fact, he's as far away from making his work as I've seen somebody do something like that.
You saw Seven Psychopaths, right?
Which is appalling. Absolutely appalling film.
Okay, just so we're clear on this. As
somebody who hasn't seen this film, I have seen some very, very divided opinions over it within
And
the
you'll
film.
See plenty more, I think.
Yeah,
that
yeah
kind of...
no, but I find those kind of films sort of intriguing because
Me
you
too.
Get films where everyone seems to either universally say, yeah, it's great or good, or some others saying, you know, it's terrible. But to have the one film where some people are like, this is amazing, a masterpiece, and then other people saying this
I didn't say it was a masterpiece.
I'm not talking about you. These are just reviews that I've seen. And then other people saying that it's morally reprehensible. Like, it's just fascinating to me that people can have such wildly divergent takes on it.
I think it's only morally reprehensible because the stuff that's included in the film...
Okay.
Is cheapened by the fact that McDonagh is only paying lip service to certain ideas and doesn't explore them in any way. He thinks he's doing Americana. He thinks he's doing a studied thing of an area, of a place. But he literally could have said it anywhere. And it doesn't... So everything he's paying lip service, it doesn't really matter except to offend people. And I think that's where the moral...
This is one of the things that I find absolutely fascinating about the film is that it was conceived in 1998 and it was written around about 2007.
Yeah.
And it's been hitched... And I think it's a mistake that it's been hitched. I think it's been very cynically hitched in order to win Oscars to the current cultural moment where it doesn't apply at all. There's nothing in the film that applies to the current cultural moment, which is where this debate is coming from.
Is this
argue.
The cultural moment like Me Too or about
Me Too and racism in America and stuff like that?
Racism in America has been an ongoing issue, and it's not. Like, it just hasn't
been
turned
up. It's just been more.
Okay, what I would argue, though, in the concept of being conceived in the early 2000s and being written in the early 2000s,
surely updated, though, Darren. He's not an idiot.
Okay.
He didn't just take this out of the drawer and say, oh, this sounds great.
Okay.
I imagine he's very
that's
well
aware.
That's kind
of what he did with Seven Psychopaths.
But I don't think he's made that... Well, you could say he's made that mistake, But I think that's being updated.
Okay, but
to
I
wouldn't give him that.
Okay, I think the conversation about it, though, has been framed, and it's been framed by the publicity team pushing for this to win Oscars, because Oscar voters love films that sound relevant.
Yeah.
I don't think it is at all. I think it's a film that's more contextually at home in, like, 2000s America.
Probably,
in that it's a story about, like, this reacting to grief and loss and suffering with anger that inflicts pain and suffering on other people. Tell me that doesn't feel like a parable for 21st century America in response.
It feels like a Tarantino knockoff, is what it feels like to me. It feels like, remember your Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead era of kind of...
I like Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead, but I think this is much better.
And there's a few more of those.
Can do
Go, for example.
It's okay. But there's worse ones than that I can't remember, but... They end up with
the cast of
Chris Penn instead of Sean Penn and stuff. You know those kind of ones.
Yes.
We got
a bargain basement Tarantino
kind of,
collaboration.
There's a lot of it feels like that.
I think this is a lot better than that.
It's probably a touch better, but not much better.
Alright.
Right now it is the Oscar favourite.
Which is nothing surprising, quite frankly.
Which is astounding.
It is, but then I'm always like this every year.
Except
for last year when we were like,
right. We move on from there to we've now discussed two of the films that are out this week. There's three films out this week. Two of them we've discussed already, so that's Coco and The Commuter. We've already talked about that. So the only other one is The Post, Steven Spielberg's The Post.
I am looking forward to seeing this.
Me too.
I generally look forward to new Spielberg movies.
I could be iffy on it, but this looks worthy Spielberg. It looks like a solid 2 hours of good, proper, heroic stuff.
It's well made. It's well
constructed.
That sounds
such an insult, Darren. Well made.
Hold on. Says the man who was like lobbing firebombs at Ron Howard for being competent.
Well, you like... But I think we can
Howard.
Spielberg is
several degrees
above
Howard.
Of Ron Howard.
No, it is.
Just say that.
What's astounding about it is how quickly it was made and how cleanly it was made and how much like... This was done, I believe, while he was rendering the special effects on Ready Player One.
But he's had pictures of this with
Jurassic Park and Schindler's List.
Yeah, but it's got an incredible lightness of touch. It moves. It's watching Meryl Streep do the Meryl Streep thing. It's watching Tom Hanks do the Tom Hanks
thing. That's the only
thing
that worried me because I'm kind of getting tired of seeing both of them doing the thing.
Really?
But together it might just explode the
might
world
overwhelm.
For me.
Let's
I get
Tom
it.
Tom Hanks, I think Meryl Streep, that isn't Meryl's fault. I think
I agree.
People, like, you want to talk about people being, like, women being underrepresented in film. Like, the fact that Meryl Streep gets nominated every year for something, regardless of what she's actually
it doesn't matter what she's in.
Yeah, it's like, she must have been nominated for an Oscar and various other awards, like, 100 times at this stage.
If you're an artist filmmaker, you'd nearly pitch a role at her, wouldn't you? Just to get yourself in the Oscar race.
Was it Dancing at Lunasa, wasn't it?
Ugh.
Was it?
Was she not in Dancing at Lunasa, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, she was.
Did she get an Oscar?
No.
Maybe not.
But there's still time. Team her up with Lenny Abramson.
You want to write up some Meryl Streep roles.
No, but the thing is, Lenny Abramson is in the Oscar conversation automatically now, whether or not.
That's true.
He has Meryl Streep.
Once you've established yourself, you're kind of there.
You're sort of in that.
You're nominated once.
I kind of look forward to The Post. It looks like a proper...
evening's entertainment.
House
is good, clean, fun.
Yeah, but it's also one of those kind of nice, it's kind of like The Commuter in a weird way, you know, like there's a sort of mid-level film that you just don't really see that much of anymore.
Yeah.
Because things now are either like indies or tentpoles. It's, you know, somewhere in the middle.
Well, you're also talking about a film that is, despite being set in the 70s, is absolutely pertinent to what is happening right now.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Apparently the New York Times is quite bitter about the post, as one might imagine.
The New York Times can go
because they want the Times.
Because they broke the story in the first place. They did a little PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, but they've been actively throwing themselves under the bus to this day. So,
but they actually did a PowerPoint presentation where they like showed their headlines of the Pentagon Papers. As
jeez,
if to say,
let it go.
It was like 1973, damn it. But yeah, so... apparently, it's the Buzz Aldrin biopic of Pentagon Papers films.
Did they also have a huge problem with, you know, the Boston...
Spotlight.
Spotlight, how the Boston Globe were portrayed in that. It should have been the New York Times, damn it.
Should always be
the New York. We weren't so busy hiring climate change deniers. And
fun fact, Michael Stuhlbarg might be in three of the Best Picture nominees this year. And
Caleb... Love Michael Stuhlbarg.
Shape of Water, Call Me By Your Name, and The Post. There's also
Call Me By Your Name is a film that should arguably be getting a bit more attention.
It's got quite a bit.
Don't say that for the Darren.
It's got some, but I feel like we could be talking about it a bit more.
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't love it, but I did like it.
But you know what's nice about it as well is that it's one of those, like, it's an LGBT story, but it doesn't have, like, a really horrible, sad ending. Like, the ending is bittersweet, but not in, like, a really miserable,
harrowing kind of thing.
I would disagree with that, but that will be a separate podcast. I think there's a lot of darkness lurking on the edge of the frame with regards to the flies and the random bleeding of the male characters, particularly when they indulge their sensuous activities. I think that there's a lot of suggestion of what's waiting for Elio and Oliver past this wonderful summer in 1983.
Where does he get this stuff?
I'm bummed out.
The moment where Oliver kisses Elio and all of a sudden his wound starts bleeding. The moment where Elio has a top of delicious ice cream and his nose opens up for no apparent reason. The moment where they're dancing in the street and Elio starts vomiting. The constant flies buzzing around, particularly the one in winter.
In the book as well?
I don't believe so. But and the film consciously moved back from 1987 to 1983, which would put it a year before the Cancer Research Institute identified AIDS as a descendant of the HIV virus, and also the point at which the panic entered public consciousness.
So you've just killed the characters, have you?
I haven't killed the characters.
You just killed the characters.
Right. Yeah. Let's talk about Call Me By Your Name.
Jesus, I thought you were like the cheery one on the podcast.
Yeah.
But
and
all of that
taking
is
on Jay's mantra. There,
all of that is
get out of my space, man.
All of that is outside the frame when it comes to Call Me By Your Name. Call Me By Your Name is lovely. I like the fact that they get that happiness. They get that space away from the world.
You don't sound
but
like
do,
you're happy about it.
But though. I do think there's an element of in Arcadia ego about it as well.
I think you may be reading a bit too much into it.
Right.
But that's just me.
Right, yo. With that, we leave it for the week.
We are back.
Next. Yes.
We
here's
never
more.
Left. And here's more on why insert villain in here. It's terrible.
See y'all next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.